Welcome to another episode of My Wake Up Call. This is the podcast where I get a taste of someone. And before I get to know them more, I say, hold it. Let's do this live. I want to introduce you to my listeners. And every now and then, I actually meet someone that I met years ago, but because I have a combination of ADD flirting with Alzheimer's, I get reintroduced to them all over again. And I've got one of them today, and I'm really excited because all I remember from our conversation in the past was a good feeling from it. And you're going to get that good feeling. So let me tell you about Michelle Rosenthal. She's an award-winning PTSD blogger, award-nominated author, keynote speaker. And her role in life is she's a trauma recovery specialist and a mental health advocate. She's appeared all over the media, CBS, NBC, Washington Post, Ladies Home Journal, Palm Beach Post, Orlando Sentinel, Huffington Post, all over the place. For many years, she was a top health blogger for the stress management community of wellsphere.com and the founder of Trauma, a PTSD blog on healthyplace.com. And she's been a frequent contributor to anxiety.org, addiction.org, recovery.org. I got to take a breath there. That's too much org for me. But we will have an organic conversation. I promise that to everyone. She's a PTSD survivor herself. We'll hear more about that, about what that was about, how she got through it and what she's learned from it and how she's either healed from it or she continues to heal from it. And she shares all this by being a winner of the Mending Broken Survivor Advocate Award. Tell them they need to shorten the title. She was also a finalist in the WEGO Health Activist Hero Award. And she's a former faculty member of the Clinical Development Institute for Timberline Knowles Residential Treatment Center. These are long phrases. And she's in Jupiter, Florida. She has an individual practice, but she's also part of the physician-led team at Palm Beach Wellness Institute and the Palms and Good Samaritan Medical Center in West Palm Beach. Oh, boy, I'm exhausted. So, Michelle, great to meet you. I'll hit you with the same question I ask all my guests, which is just pause and what is the through line in your life? What has been a consistency? And what do you think you're called to do? And tell us about how you got called to do it.
That is such a great question. And first, let me just say how glad I am to be back in touch, because this is you and I turning the tables, because many years ago I had you on my podcast and I just loved talking to you. You have such a great approach to being not only authentic, but also having a really meaningful conversation. And that is one of the things that I remember most about our interview before. So thank you for inviting me into your space today.
Oh, my pleasure. So tell us about Michelle, and what is that through line that you think is consistent and leads you to now?
I am going to tell you a story. It starts when I was 6 years old. I've never told this story in public. It's not that weird. It's just nobody's ever asked me anything that's caused it to come up. So this is just for you. And when I was 6 years old, I remember going to bed every night, and I wanted to be able to know every single person in the world. And so I literally would lie in my bed at night and pretend that I could float out of my body. And I calculated in my little six-year-old mind that if I could float into every single person on the planet for 10 seconds, if I could be in their brain for 10 seconds, I'd be able to meet everybody overnight while I was sleeping. And so that's how I used to go to bed at night, every night, wondering how could I float out of myself and into everybody's head for 10 seconds before I wake up. And the reason that I'm sharing that with you is because I've always, since a little girl, really been driven by the idea of connection. I like to connect with people. I love to connect with people I know, people I don't know, it doesn't really matter. I love that element of connection, which as I grew into an adult became my number one value. But so it started back then, that idea of loving to connect with people. And then when I was 13, and I survived this horrific trauma that went on for weeks and included a near-death experience. And I came out of that all realizing connection in an entirely different way, because when you have a near-death experience, you realize connecting here versus connecting someplace else are two totally different things. And the irony is that after my trauma, I felt so disconnected.
Can you tell us what the trauma was?
Absolutely. And as a doctor, you may know about this. I had toxic epidermal necrolysis syndrome, which is just a fancy way of saying I had an allergic reaction to a medication that turned me into a full body burn victim inside and out. So I was in a quarantine burn unit for weeks while this went on. And this was in 1981. Nobody, it took them a week to diagnose what was happening. They didn't have a protocol. Today, I mean, like that, they know what's happening. They put people into a coma and they don't bring you out till it's over. But they didn't do that for me. I was awake the whole time. So pretty horrific. And it has a high mortality rate. So the irony is that after all of that, I felt so disconnected from myself, others, and the world. And I spent almost 30 years in PTSD feeling that way. And you ask, how did I get to where I am today? Because when it took 24 years to get a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder. And then I went like Rambo into recovery. I went, as I affectionately call it, into a healing rampage. I was determined. And when I came out the other side, I thought, you've got to be kidding. If you had just told me what I know now, I could have healed 3 decades ago. I lost all this time because nobody knew how to connect with me. Nobody knew how to help me. And nobody really noticed what was wrong. And so it became my mission to help others heal faster than I did, which just sort of brings it full circle, because what do I do now all day is connect with people all around the world to help them move forward, to help them transform, to resolve, and to soothe those old wounds of their own traumas. So it's sort of a funny circle to wind up back where you started, but at a different level, of course.
Can you share any pivotal moments in your recovery or realizing you had it where you turned a corner? There was an experience of, I think I'm going to be okay, or I see the path to healing as opposed to just coping.
Yes. So I struggled for so many years not knowing what was wrong. And so there were two moments, actually, and I'll just tell two quick stories that show you the progression of that process. So in early 2005, so my trauma was 1981, 2005, I was a real mess, just mentally, emotionally, physically, my body was just breaking down. My mind was breaking down and literally breaking. I had broken some bones and the doctors just didn't understand how those bones had broken when the accident that caused them just wasn't that important. It wasn't that much. And so I found myself on the Upper East Side of Manhattan at Cornell Medical with an endocrinologist, because I'd been referred there because I needed to speak to a specialist, like what was going on with my body. And it was February, so it was super cold, and his office was right next door to the East River. And I went up into the building and he looked at all of my medical records and he said, you're in big trouble because you don't weigh enough. I had a raging eating disorder at the time. I weighed like 100, 105 pounds. I was 5'8". And he said to me, you're in big trouble. Your bones are going to start spontaneously crumbling within the next 10 years if you don't fix what's going on with you right now. Talk about a wake-up call. I mean, I was terrified. All of a sudden, I'm thinking I'm going to hail a cab and my arm's just going to collapse, or I'm going to go down into the subway and my leg's just going to disintegrate. Like, there's nothing like terror to like get you going. And I remember walking out of his office just so afraid. And I went and I stood at the railing over the East River on this dreary, freezing cold February day. And I just cried and cried and cried all by myself. I mean, nobody's there. And I just sobbed like, I'm falling apart and I don't even know what to do. But all of a sudden, and I realized I'm terrified. I'm so frightened by what this doctor has just told me. And here's the moment that you ask about. All of a sudden, that voice in you that knows more than you do just said something so simple. It was, I've been terrified since I was 13. I wake up every day terrified. This feeling that I'm having in this moment is amplifying what I live in all day, every day. Because after my original trauma, I had no therapeutic intervention. I refused to speak about what had happened. I just pretended it didn't happen. And I started running as fast as I could to outrun the memories. But that day, I had to stand still and realize it didn't work. I'm always terrified. And that little voice that said, you've always been terrified, also said, you need to double down. You need to heal. And so I had a therapist at the time, but I went back to him and I said, okay, I'm ready to do the real work. And I'm coming twice a week for double sessions because I can't live like this. So that was one moment. Does that answer what you were asking?
Mm-hmm.
So that really, the vision of the worst possible outcome spurred me into really taking ownership and responsibility. So a few years went by and I bounced around from therapy. Like I started with talk therapy, but we also did energy psychology and energy work. I always say I did the alphabet. It was TFT, EFT, TAT, EMDR. I did it all and nothing was freeing me. And fast forward a couple of years and it was New Year's Eve, 2006, going into 2007. And I had relocated because I felt I needed to get out of New York City and to a small beach town. I felt very sure that if I could sit on the beach, I could figure things out. I still didn't have a PTSD diagnosis when I moved. So I was just going on impulse and nothing was working. Everything I had tried wasn't working. And I was at this huge hotel for a New Year's Eve party with my family. Everybody's having this great time. And where am I? I'm in the bathroom, locked in a stall, in a ball gown, no less, right? Crying my eyes out that another year of my own craziness is ending and another year is beginning and there's no end in sight. And I'm thinking, how am I possibly going to live like this? I can't stand this. And I was entertaining the idea that, you know, maybe this is the last year. Like, maybe I'll just end this year because I can't imagine having to live the rest of my life like this. And eventually what got me out of the bathroom was there's only so long you can stay in a stall without people banging on it saying you should be done by now. So I dried off my face. I went back into the party and I said to my brother, just get on the dance floor with me because I can't talk to anybody and I don't want anyone talking to me. And so we got on the dance floor and I've been, you know, freestyle dancing with my brother since we were little kids. He's my baby brother. So it was a comfortable place to be. And Mark, I can't, even to this day, I can't tell you what happened on that dance floor, except to say that something about me just gave in to the music. And it was, you know, it wasn't any special music. It was just like, there was a live band. It was a cover band, like playing party music. But something in me gave over to the music and my body gave in to the movement. And in a little while, I started to feel something that I couldn't name. And I remember like thinking to myself, what is this? What is this? And I just kept dancing and dancing, trying to figure out what the heck is this feeling? Because it was so foreign. And after maybe 45 minutes of dancing, you know, bless my brother's heart that he was willing to just like keep going because I couldn't figure out what was happening to me. I realized the feeling that I had was joy. It was completely, utterly shocking to me that I could feel joy when I'd been in such despair for so long. And all of a sudden, that was like, you know, the clouds parted and the sun started shining. And I realized I'm not wholly completely damaged. I'm not completely lost. I'm not completely dead inside. I'm not completely black and horrible and dark inside. There is light in me somewhere. And that led me right into my final, it was the last year. It was just a different last year than I thought it was going to be. It was the last year of PTSD because I made my New Year's resolution that year. This is my year. I'm kicking this once and for all. And I'm going to figure it out. And so that's the second story to answer your question. It was, you know, first it was fear that made me realize something about myself that needed to be healed. And then it was music that made me realize something about myself that was an internal resource that I could use and leverage for that ultimate recovery, which it took me another 10 months, but I did it. And by the end of 2007, I was symptom free and I remain symptom free to this day. And so that was a big turning point to realize that I could connect to some enormous resource in myself that I didn't even realize existed. So interesting, right? How the most unexpected moments lead us to where we're trying to go.
Are you willing to try something?
Always.
And if this is too triggering, say, you know, we'll talk about this offline.
Not possible to trigger me. Not possible to trigger me. So bring it on.
I want you to imagine your 13-year-old self, maybe at the depth of wherever it was, maybe before you started recovering or whatever, and feeling that I'm not going to make it, feeling I don't know what's going on, feeling I can't do this anymore, I can't make it through another day. And what I'd like you to imagine is you're going to go back to her as you are now. Mm-hmm. And you're going to look into her eyes and tell me what you see, because she's looking up at you wide eyes and she doesn't know that she made it, not just into her future. She doesn't know that she made it to the next day.
That's right.
And she doesn't believe it. She doesn't believe what anyone tells her, but she's convinced, you know, I don't know how I made it through today. If I have another day like this, I'm leaving. I'm going. Mm-hmm. And she can't believe that she's going to get through it. And no matter what anyone tells her, in her heart of hearts, she doesn't believe it. And I want you to imagine that you go back to her. I want you to describe the expression on her face.
Okay, go back to her during the original trauma.
The original trauma, and think of a real low moment during the original trauma.
Yeah.
So can you picture that? Was that right?
Yeah, the moment just before the NDE was horrific. Yeah.
The moment just before the what?
Just before my near-death experience, there was something that occurred that was horrific, and I really didn't think I would survive it. So, okay, I've got my low moment.
So what I want you to do is picture her face, and you're going up to her, and she, and no matter what anyone tells her, she doesn't think she's going to survive.
Yeah.
And you look into her eyes, and you see a combination of horror and terror. Horror, like what's happening to me. Terror, I can't take this another moment. And I want you to imagine that you go up to her, And she doesn't trust anyone. She just thinks she's falling apart. And I want you to imagine she says, "Who are you?" Okay. And you say, "I was someone who went through something like what you're going through." And I want you to imagine her, she says to you, yeah, but you made it. I didn't." No, I understand that. Yeah. And then you say to her, I know that's how you feel. What's the worst part of this? And I want you to imagine she looks up at you with her eyes and she says, "I don't want to tell anyone, but I think I'd rather be dead." I don't want to tell anyone because everyone's trying so hard, but I can't take it anymore. Mm-hmm. And you're just locking onto her eyes like I'm locking onto yours. Mm-hmm. And she's looking at you like, how come you're not scared away? I mean, if I told that to other people, you know, they'd lecture me or they'd reassure me. And then I'd get really pissed off when they'd say, oh, it's going to be fine. F you, it's going to be fine.
Right.
You're not my skin. And so she's looking into your eyes and she's bewildered. Like, why are you still looking at me? And then let me ask you, is there a mole or something, you know, on your body, on an arm or a leg that you've had your whole life? Hmm. Or a dot somewhere?
Other than this one, I've always had that one. But you mean someplace that nobody else would know?
No. Just something where she has it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's use this. Yep.
Okay. So that leaves that. And then you say, show me that dot you have on such and such. Mm-hmm. She says, why? And you keep looking into her eyes. You say, just show me. And then, okay, she shows you. And then you show her yours. And then you say, I'm you.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm you and you made it.
Nice.
I'm getting emotional because I know how you just want relief from pain. And I'm here to tell you that if you stick it out, you're going to get through it. In fact, you're not only going to get through it, you can have a life that you can't even imagine.
Yeah.
And not only that, this pain you're going through, I hate to tell you, you're going to hit a few bumps along the way. But it's going to teach you about stuff. And remember how when you were a little kid, you wanted to connect with the world? All this stuff you're going through, it's going to enable you to connect with the world in ways that are much different, much better.
Yeah.
And then I want you, so can you picture what I'm telling you?
I can.
And I want you to picture that you go over to her and you hug her. And even though the skin's sensitive, whatever, let's imagine she can do it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I want you to imagine that you're fusing your DNA to her DNA, almost like two chromosomes, you as the adult with you as the 13-year-old.
Yeah.
And I want you to imagine holding her and you just feel that she's collapsing into you because she feels safe because she didn't know she was going to have a future.
Yeah.
So I want you to imagine, you know, you can cross your arms that you're holding her. Mm-hmm. I want you to take a few breaths. And with your arms, I want you to imagine that you're telling her it's safe. Can you feel that?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now I want you to be the 13-year-old and those two arms are around you as an adult. So become her. Mm-hmm. And with your two arms, you're holding on to you as an adult because you need to know that you're going to have a future.
Yeah.
And you just, you sort of can't believe it, but you're holding on. And I want you to just try to imagine the combination of you holding her as an adult and the DNA fusing and then holding on to her. Mm. Then being the 13-year-old holding on to your future because, and here's what I want you to imagine she's saying. So I want you to imagine you're the 13-year-old holding on to your adult self. Mm-hmm. And I want you to imagine that you're saying to your adult self, please don't run away from me in activity. No, please don't. You try to keep busy to get away from me, and I'm not going to hurt you, and I'm not going to make you sick. And if I hug you, we're not going to both drown. But sometimes you worry me, grown up Michelle, because you get exhausted. Mm-hmm. You know, you get exhausted, and you don't know really. You don't know a lot of peace because you're so active.
Yeah.
And I think what you're active is you're afraid of me. Mm-hmm. And you're afraid that you don't know how I survived and you don't want to go through it again. You don't have to go through it again. You just have to feel me, because I was all alone. And I've never let anyone feel me, because I've never believed anyone. But if you're me, it's kind of easy to believe. Mm-hmm. And when you're at your most hyper self, and you know you can pick up speed, and please, when you're doing a keynote, they love your energy. Go for it. Yeah. Knock it out of the park. You know, give them all that energy you have. But, you know, make sure within the same day you pause and realize that I'm there. And I need you to know that, because I've been waiting for you for many years.
Yeah.
So can you track with any of this?
Absolutely. Thank you, because that was just beautiful. It's so therapeutic. And, you know, now in my work with clients, we do that kind of process, right? You have to like merge and integrate the past with the present and the future, so that those old wounds, those old younger selves who are carrying those wounds, can understand that they get somewhere, that they do survive, right? That's the most important thing right away, to sort of integrate within the whole mind-body realm. The idea of survival, which is so foreign to what the actual trauma experience is. And then you're right, because then we all have those coping mechanisms, right? And I love the title of, you know, one of your newest books, which is Why Cope When You Can Heal, because the whole idea is to stop those coping mechanisms of running and instead be able to just find your authentic self, be your true self in the peace of it, rather than the running to try to, you know, let go of what's in your history, but be able to sit still in the present moment and be all of your history and who you are in the present moment at the same time. So that was beautiful. Thank you.
You're welcome. Can I share an anecdote, an eating disorders anecdote? I'll send you the article.
Yeah.
So I trained at UCLA, and I trained way back when they were world renowned for the eating disorders program. Mm. But it could be pretty harsh. I mean, if you were down to 80 pounds and you wouldn't eat, they'd tube feed you. I mean, they didn't want to, but or they'd IV and all that. And I remember I was on call in the emergency room, which means, you know, people would come in and you'd decide whether you needed to admit them or not. And there was a young woman who came in who was, I was told I shouldn't even mention the weight, because people with eating disorders say you mention a number, they get triggered. But she was skeletal. Mm-hmm. And it was a Saturday, and it was clear that she needed to be admitted to the inpatient unit. And I was a psychiatrist on call, and they said, it'll be a while till we can get the bed ready. And, you know, I could have gone into the waiting room and, you know, taken a nap, but I had time. There was no one else coming in. I didn't turn her over to the nurse. And in my training, we learned all kinds of modalities, hypnosis, guided imagery, visualization. And something spoke to me, and I said to her, just like I said to you, can we try something? You know, I hope it'll help you feel better. But, and if it doesn't, just say, you know, can we stop? Okay. I want you to tell me to stop. And she said, sure. And I guess even back then I could sort of do a pretty good job of building rapport.
Yeah.
And I said, and I just made this up, but I said it to her. I said, I'd like you to close your eyes, put your legs up on this chair in front of you, get relaxed. And I want you to breathe slowly. And I said, are you right-handed or left-handed? She said, right-handed. I said, I want you to put your left hand over your stomach. And with each breath, I want you to imagine the mommy you needed and always wanted. And we're not here to bash your mother or your mommy. You know, they'll find out all about it when you go upstairs. But this is just sort of an exercise. But I want you to imagine that the left hand on your stomach is the mommy you always wanted, saying, I'm here and I'm not going anywhere. And with each breath, I'm here and I'm not going anywhere. And just feel that left hand there. Then I said, now I want you, after a while, I said, now I want you to put your right hand over your left hand. And that's the hand of your daddy. And your daddy is saying to your mommy's hand, we're going to get through this. We're going to be okay. And so I had to go back and forth, just breathing slowly. The left hand is saying, I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. That's your mommy. And the right hand is, we're all going to be okay. We're going to get through this. And that's your daddy. And then I just had her just breathe in and out, feeling each of those, feeling the right hand touching the left hand touching her. And we did this for a while. And then I got an announcement that the bed was ready and they were going to come down to pick her up. And so I said, I don't know if this is hypnosis, visualization. You know, I'm just in training here. And I said, I'm going to count to 10. And when I get to 8, you're going to start opening your eyes. Okay. And you can remember everything we talked about or nothing that we talked about. But your body's going to remember what this felt like.
Nice.
So you can't fail. And we counted slowly back from 1 to 10. And at 8, she started clicking her eyes open. Then at 10, she's looking around. And we get to 10, and she takes a deep breath. And then the people come, and they say, oh, we're here. And she looks at me, Michelle. And she gets up, and I said, you're going to make it through this. And she looks at me, and she said, can I go to the cafeteria? I am starved.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
So could you follow any of that? Could you follow that?
Yeah.
Oh. Could you relate to it? Could you relate to any of it?
You mean as a former?
Yeah, yeah.
Former, as someone who struggled with an eating disorder for 2 decades?
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Because what are you really doing? You're grounding her to her own self. Mm-hmm. You're connecting her back to her own resources. We're going to get through this. You know, everything, you're basically connecting her to her ability to soothe herself and activate her own internal resources mm-hmm. in a way that's responsible, action-oriented, accountable, and knowledgeable. I mean, those are the things that parental figures so often represent, right? And so in a very short amount of time, you did that for her. Wow. That's amazing. What a great story. Thank you for sharing it.
Well, thank you for allowing me to share it. And to our listeners, I often talk to our listeners, even though this is tape.
Yeah.
If you're listening to this episode, and you have PTSD, or you resonate with any of what we've talked about, I'd really advise you to seek out Michelle, because she's a combination of having had the experience, learning from it, connecting dots from it. She's not salesy, but she's gotten through it and she can help you get through it. So I really would ask you to listen to this again if you're suffering from this, and seek her out. And tell us where people can find out more about you.
Oh, you can just come join me at mytraumacoach.com. And, you know, even if you're not sure that you're ready to change or to transform or anything, but you just want to, you know, there's so much we can do on our own, right? And so one of the things that I offer on my website is a simple 20-minute, it's free, it's an MP3, it's a brain training audio, and it trains your brain for peace and calm. It combines 3 different modalities, so your brain gets to sort of learn to start working in some different ways. And just a repetition of that, even if you're not ready, because I think that's the hardest thing, don't you, is to, you know, stepping into a space of recovery is frightening, is terrifying, actually, which is why I avoided it for all the years that I did. But I think that there are so many things we can do on our own just to take that one little step to sort of put your toe in the pool of healing and gauge the temperature of the water and start to acclimate to it. So that then when you're ready and you're ready to submerge your whole self, then you can start looking for, okay, who's going to help me? Because nobody can do this on their own. It takes work. And it, you know, my best advice in that space is to find someone that you really resonate with. Because if you, and you know this, Dr. Mark, that when you have that therapeutic connection, like that girl had with you, you created some kind of rapport and trust so quickly that she was able to access not only the experience you offered her, but also her own self. And that's the beauty of it. So there, mytraumacoach.com, there's an audio. If anything that's useful to you is there, I'm always happy to connect. There's actually a page called Connect on my website. And I'm happy to answer any questions or connect in any way that's helpful to anyone, because I believe we all have healing potential. The goal is learning to access it. And for that, you have to dig deep. But I believe it's possible for every one of us.
I'll tell you another reason, if you're a listener, why you should connect with Michelle. Because there's lots of treatments out there, and a lot of them are fairly aggressive because, you know, they're selling. They're selling their treatment and they're selling their program. And what I like most about what I've heard from Michelle is she has all those resources. She's continuing to be curious and she's always learning. She's connecting her learning to practical steps. But what makes her different from some of the programs that I know that are salesy is Michelle is exceedingly kind. That's important.
It is, right? I don't feel like healing is not a business. It's like you use the word calling sometimes, right? Helping people is a calling. It's not a business. Mm-hmm. I mean, even if I weren't getting paid, I would still do this work because it's the highest form of connection, I think, to partner with someone on that transformative journey and to be a guide or a facilitator. But more than that, I see it as partners. It's a partnership. So thank you for seeing me. Actually, thank you for seeing me and the truth of who I am and for offering your trust in me, because I highly respect you. And so it means a lot to me.
Well, and I do trust you. I remember I had a mentor named Warren Bennis, big leadership guy, and people have heard the podcast, have heard me talk about him. And I remember after his 80th birthday, we were having breakfast, and he said, you know, they did this big deal, this big tribute to me. And he leaned forward and he was a little embarrassed. He said, normally I don't like when they make a fuss out of me, but I really liked it. And I said to him what I'm going to say to you, Michelle. I said, what you don't know about yourself, Warren, is that within 2 minutes of meeting you, people can trust you to never hurt them. Mm. And people like Howard Schultz and David Gergen, who you mentored, they don't trust anyone to not hurt them. And that's special.
Yeah.
And I would say that about you, Michelle. And I'd say that to our listeners, reach out to Michelle if any of what she talks about lands for you, because you can trust her to never hurt you.
Thank you.
So thank you for being on. Thank you, my listeners. Please subscribe. Please share this. Please share reviews so how we can do an even better job. And when wake up calls come your way, you know, don't beat up on yourself. If you miss the first bus, they come fairly regularly. And one of these, you're going to get on the bus, you're going to wake up, and your life's just like 13-year-old Michelle. Your life and your future is going to be better than you can even imagine. So take care, everyone. Till next time. Bye-bye.